if I was listening carefully, it seems as if the songs that we sang tonight were making reference to our spiritual Canaan, our heavenly reward when this life is over, and of course when this world comes to an end. And of course the last song that we sang was encouraging us to stand firm, be faithful, not give up, trust and stand like Joshua. Now, in our lesson this morning, we talked about those 12 stones that were taken from the bed of Jordan and stacked in a heap around the area of Gilgal as they passed through the Jordan. And the question was asked twice, what mean these stones? And we talked about those particular stones and that we today, we're not building a physical monument, but we were building a spiritual monument, and we were laying spiritual stones. Remember, if you will, we made 3 points. We talked about the importance of the inspiration of the Bible and teaching that to our children. We talked about the one church and how important it was to instill in the lives of our children that Christ came to build His church, and died on the cross of Calvary and shed His blood to do so. And then last of all, we made the point that if we were going to lay up some spiritual stones, we were going to have to rely upon the gospel that was given for us for the instruction purpose of allowing us to know what Christ's will for us today was. Now, we made a point from Galatians chapter 1, and we said that the gospel was just like the church in one sense. There is one church, and there is one gospel. And Paul had a very huge problem that he had to overcome. Remember, if you will, the Apostle Paul helped to establish the churches in Galatia. Many of them were established on his second journey. And it wasn't long thereafter until the Judaizing teachers were following his heels. Everywhere he would go, they would follow. Their intentions was first of all to try to deny his apostleship and convince those congregations that he established that he was not a true apostle. That he was not like the original apostles, and that they should not really take heed to his teachings because of such. And of course, Paul heard very quickly after their conversion that they were really being, they were really being tempted by these Judaizing teachers to leave the faith. They were no longer as concerned about serving the Lord in His kingdom as they were going back and trying to live under and adapt some of the Jewish practices that were under the law of Moses. Now that's the reason that Paul made the statement in Galatians chapter 1 that he was shocked and that he was concerned about. And he made the point in verse 7, he says, there's not another gospel, there's but one, and if you listen to another one, it's not the certified message that they embraced and that they trusted in and believed in. The gospel that was able to save them, gave them the information that they needed to be an obedient child of God and to be reconciled to God. Now, it would not be uncommon to visit any congregation in Stone County, and there are numerous ones. You could visit 10 or 15 different congregations and hear 10 or 15 different messages. All claiming me to preach the same gospel. But yet, you see, it's a different gospel. So Paul was really trying to lay the groundwork for these New Testament Christians to understand that there was only one gospel, and any other gospel was a fake. It was a phony. It was not the true gospel that was the certified message that could save them, reconcile them from God. Now, in the second chapter of the book of Galatians, Paul begins to unfold this message. And notice, if you will, the first thing that he does in the first few verses of Galatians chapter 2 is to try to prove his apostleship, and he basically gives them some historical information about his past life. Remember, if you will, this was the person who was, before his conversion, referred to as Saul. And Saul was on his road to Damascus, having the papers in his hand with the authority to arrest, put in chains anybody that lived in that area that professed to be a Christian, and bring them back to Jerusalem, put them on trial, and imprison them in a jail. So he's basically explaining to these New Testament Christians in Galatians chapter 2 about his life after his conversion. Remember, it's in the book of Acts in two places that bright light he talks about that came down from heaven that blinded him, how that he was led into the city blind. And from that point, Ananias comes to him and said, "Saul, why tarriest thou? Arise and be baptized and wash away your sins, calling on the name of the Lord." Now, we talked a little bit about the denominational system that's so prevalent in our world and in our society today, the denominational system that did not exist back when Paul was converted, when Peter stood up in Acts chapter 2 and preached that first gospel sermon. Churches that follow after men, not that old Jerusalem gospel that Paul talks about here, that certified message. It was that message that he embraced. It was that message that prompted him to arise and go down into that watery grave and come up a new creature in Christ Jesus. And he's telling them, here's what I did after that conversion. I was converted just as you. And then he goes into a discourse for the next three or four chapters, and we'll try to cover about, maybe go through the third one tonight. But what Paul is trying to do as he unfolds this message in book form to these Christians who are on the verge of apostasy and leaving the faith, he explains to them something about the old law. You see, they are a lot like people today. They have not studied the old law. They're not familiar with the old law. They know very little about the total context of the whole law, the old law and its purpose. And what Paul was trying to do was basically to tell them and teach them what we've been studying about since we left Egypt in our study from Egypt to Canaan. Explaining to them the purpose of the law, what it could do, and what it could not do. Now, you see, what these Judaizing teachers were doing was teaching a false message about the law of Moses. And they were making a big to-do about Moses and about Moses' teachings and about Moses' faith and this law that they had been living under and how that they needed to adapt into their worship service portions of this message. Now notice, if you will, what Paul tells Gentile. We who are Jews by nature and not sinners of the Gentiles, knowing that a man is not justified by the works of the law, but by the faith of Jesus Christ, even we have believed in Jesus Christ that we might be justified by the faith of Christ and not by the works of the law. For by the works of the law shall no flesh be justified. But if we, while we seek to be justified by Christ, we ourselves also will find sinners, is therefore Christ the minister of sin? God forbid. You see what's going on here? These Judaizing teachers were telling these people, you can be justified by being obedient to the law. If you practice circumcision, if you observe the feast days and keep the Passover, then you can be justified just like the people during Moses' day. Well, see, they had a false conclusion as to what justification was all about and how it was being taught in the law of Moses. Justification, as Paul's going to point out in chapter 3, is not because of Moses. It's not because they kept the works of the law during Moses' time. It was because they kept the faith of their father Abraham. Remember, we talked about it's not about his blood. It's about their faith in Abraham and God's promise to Abraham about the seed that was going to flow from his loins. And Paul's going to make a big point about Abraham was justified by faith long before Moses' law came into existence and the practice of circumcision and the feast day. Now turn with me just a moment, if you will, to the 6th chapter of the book of John. John chapter 6. Now it's a rather lengthy chapter, and we're going to look at a section of it beginning in about verse 28-29. I'm going to basically start in verse 26. Notice, if you will, Jesus has talking about, or has been talking about, him being the bread of life. And they're going to question him, and they're going to talk about the bread that Moses fed the children of Israel on. Notice what it says. Jesus answered them and said, "Verily, verily, I say unto you, you seek me not because you saw the miracles, but because you did eat of the loaves and were filled." Pay close attention to that. Because you see, we're misled quite often. Remember, we said this morning, the purpose of the church, the number one goal of the church, is to preach the gospel. Should we be benevolent-minded? Yes, indeed. Where should our benevolence go? What's the purpose of our benevolence? On occasions, it's to help the world. But in most cases, it's to help the needy among the church. We miss that point so often. And Jesus is saying, you people did not pay one bit of attention to my message, my spiritual lesson. All you were concerned about was your physical appetite, your hungry stomach. And you're here following me not because of my spiritual lesson that can affect where you spend eternity when this life is over. But you're here for another meal of fish and bread. Now he goes on to say, labor not for the meat that perisheth, but for that meat which endureth unto everlasting life, which the Son of Man shall give unto you, for him hath God the Father sealed. You know, it's not uncommon for elders to have to sit down and question people. And I think this is really a good plan. Because you see, you need to discuss their spiritual needs and let them know that though they are destitute and they need help physically, they really need to be more concerned about their spiritual appetite than their physical appetite. And it seems to be the case that many people in the church, as well as people in general, they think that it should just be doled out by the hundreds and thousands of dollars without any question as to the needs of those people and their spiritual concerns. Back a number of years ago, there was a tornado that came through not far from where we were working, and the churches went together and we set up in one of the yards and of the church in that particular town, and we fed people for a solid week, and there's no telling how much food that was given. And it was rather sad when we went into the building. There was not a tract. There was not a Christian paper. There was not anything that we could give to those people that would help them spiritually. If we're helping somebody physically, we need to be like the sinless Son of God and let them know that if we're going to help them physically, we need to talk about their spiritual needs first, their spiritual concerns. That's what Jesus was doing right here. Notice as we go a little bit further. He's told them, now you labor not for the meat that perisheth, but for the meat that endureth unto everlasting life, which the Son of Man shall give unto you, for him hath God the Father sealed. Then they said unto him, what shall we do that we might work the works of God? Jesus answered and said unto them, this is the work of God, that you believe on him whom he has sent. They said therefore unto him, what sign showest thou then that we may see and believe thee? What dost thou work? What doest thou work? Our fathers did eat manna in the desert. As it is written, he gave them bread from heaven to eat. Then Jesus said unto them, verily, verily, I say unto you, Moses gave you not that bread from heaven, but my Father giveth you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is he which cometh down from heaven and giveth life unto the world. Then said they unto him, Lord, evermore give us this bread. And Jesus said unto them, I am the bread of life. He that cometh to me shall never hunger. He that believeth on me shall never thirst. But I said unto you, that you also have seen me and believe not. All that the Father shall give me shall come to me, and him that cometh to me I will in no wise cast out. For I came down from heaven not to do my own will, listen to this, but the will of him that sent me. Notice, if you will, the lesson that Jesus taught these people. They were in a terrible spiritual condition. They were lost, separated from God, without hope in the world, and did not even know their spiritual condition. They thought just because they were Abraham's children, they thought just because they knew something about Moses and his law. But yet the end conclusion were they ate the bread. They ate the fishes. They were there for some more. And they were rejecting the very bread of life. And Jesus was trying to tell them, did, they would have also known that the spiritual lesson was rejected, and 600,000 graves were opened out in the wilderness. Paul was trying to show these people in Galatians chapter 2 the truth about the law of Moses, the truth about those Judaizing teachers, and that they themselves needed to rely on the bread from heaven, the spiritual bread from heaven. Because the Son of God had left the portals of heaven itself, died on the cross, and had been resurrected from the grave. Now notice, if you will, how Paul closes out the second chapter. He said, I don't frustrate the grace of God, for if righteousness came by the law, then Christ is dead in vain. You see what he's saying? He's saying, if you brethren go back and try to live under the law and try to be justified under the law, Christ came to this earth and he died in vain. Well, why would it be in vain? Because they were not trusting on the Son of God for their righteousness, for their justification. Now notice, if you will, how Paul begins the third chapter. He says, oh, foolish Galatians, who hath bewitched you? You see what's happening? The gospel that we talked about this morning, the power of God that brings salvation, had lost its spell on these New Testament Christians. They were being duped. They were being led to believe that the cross of Christ was vain. They had taken their eyes off of the cross and they were looking back to the old law. Now notice, if you will, Paul then goes on in the third chapter, after referring to them as foolish Galatians, he then begins to quiz them in verse 2. He says, this only would I learn of you, receive you the Spirit by the works of the law, or the hearing of faith? Many times when you hear the word faith used in the New Testament, and especially when it has the little article "the" in front of it, the faith, it's the same thing as saying the gospel, the power of God under salvation. He said, did you receive the Spirit because you trusted in the law, or because of the faith that you embraced when someone preached to you that saving truth? Are you so foolish, he said in verse 3, having begun in the Spirit, are you now made perfect by the flesh? Have you suffered so many things in vain, if it be yet in vain? He therefore that ministereth to you the Spirit, and worketh miracles among you, doeth he it by the works of the law, or by the hearing of faith? You see what he's saying? He's saying, brethren, wake up. Get your eyes back on the right object. Focus your life back on the cross and the gospel that had the power of God to save you. And then he really focuses on the preacher that preached that first message. It could have been him. It could have been one of his helpers of one of his disciples. But he said, he therefore that ministereth to you the Spirit, did he do it by the law? Or did he do it by the hearing of the faith? Now we'll pick up there. Well, we can't do it next week because we're going to start our meeting. But we want to come back and we want to look at the latter part of chapter 3. And show how that he talked about Abraham and his faith that we've been looking at. He talks about Moses again, talks about the purpose of the law and what it was for, to really make these people see what they were giving up. Now, this is a very valuable lesson, because there are people today that are just as confused about the faith and the gospel and its relationship to the old law and the patriarchal system as they were back then here in the book of Galatians. Now, if there are those in the audience that have never rendered obedience to the gospel, you have the opportunity to be born again. If you're in the audience and you just need the prayers of the congregation to keep on keeping on, to be faithful, having the hope and trust of that eternal